Penguin Random House Audio presents The Waters and the Wild by DeSales Harrison. Read for you by Mark Deakins. Prologue, October 2008. Had you a night scope, or the eye of a night bird staring down from the rafters of the church, you could make him out, the priest. Supine, sunk in darkness, wide awake. He had not seen her come in, the girl. How long ago had that been, Father Spurlock wondered, lying on the shelter cot, his gaze lost above him in the groined and vaulting shadows of the church. 3 weeks, he counted, 3 weeks since she appeared, occupying the cafe table as though she had always been there, her profile still and grave as a figure cut in bas-relief. The table she had chosen in the church cafe was the small one beneath the Noah window, and the stained glass eye of Noah's crow scrutinized her, or rather the sheet of paper she'd unfolded in front of her, as though the crow had perched on the gunwale of the ark for that purpose alone. That day she had approached him, shown him the paper, and abruptly departed, leaving him with nothing save the name Clementine Abend scrawled on the palm of his hand. How long had she been sitting there, staring out at the evening rush-hour traffic? Or rather, through the traffic, he thought, as one might stare through a clear stream to its stream-bed. Had she been there when he'd tied his apron on over his clericals and assumed the 5 p.m. shift behind the cafe counter? And at what moment had she changed, imperceptibly and without moving, from anyone into someone, from someone into that girl? But no, she wasn't a girl anymore. Even from where he stood, he could sense that. 18? Possible, though she seemed older. 20? No, younger than that. Something in her bearing, in the unmoved abstraction of her gaze, had convinced him that she expected no one, that no one would arrive to join her. The volume of huge darkness pressed down on his chest like a book of stone. Yes, he remembered. She had chosen the table under the Noah window, the crow over her shoulder hunched up and pitch black against the glassy expanse of the floodwaters. If the crow had been visible when she had come in, he thought, if the rest of the window had yet to go dark, then she had arrived before sunset. She had remained into the evening, even after Luis, the custodian, had stacked the last chairs and herded the tables together, chaining everything to an eye-bolt he'd sunk in the church facade. "Buenas noches, padre," Luis had said as he always said, closing the doors on the setting sun as he left.
"Que duerma bien."
Then the girl had been alone in the closed shop. It was Father Spurlock's custom, since the café had first opened 8 months ago in what had once been the Lady Chapel, to intone a mock dismissal, filling the space with his ringing ecclesial baritone. "Hallowed grounds is closing now. Go in peace. We're here every day, even Sundays," before adding with ham-bone emphasis, "especially on Sundays." Now, however, he didn't know what to say. She couldn't, she wasn't, hoping to stay in the church, was she? The overnight visitors, as they were known with varying degrees of irony by the vestry, knew to approach the church after dark, to stash their carts behind the alley dumpsters before making their way through the service door. Surely she was not one of them. Even if there was something vagabond about her, she'd propped a worn backpack in the seat facing her. Her bearing shared nothing with the unreachable, untouchable abjection of the visitors. Untying his apron, he had resolved then to revert to his pastoral approach and greet her as he would greet any tourist or passerby from the avenue. "Welcome to the Incarnation, miss," he would say. "I'm Father Spurlock. What brings you here today?" He regretted now, as he never did otherwise, that he had let his beard, heavy and lion gold, grow long enough to hide his priest's collar. 3 weeks later, staring up from his cot into the dimensionless darkness of the church. He saw it again as though she had never left, her profile against the wall beneath the Noah window. The custodian man, she had said, had told her to wait until the coffee shop had closed. Padre Spurlock, Luis had said, would be able to see her then. So, Father Spurlock thought, I have Luis to thank for this as well. We've got Luis to thank for this, Mrs. Nickerson, his helmet-haired secretary, never tired of proclaiming, whether in amazement or gratitude or exasperation. Luis, whom the church payroll listed as sexton. Luis, who referred to himself, even after 40 years and 6 rectors, as the janitor. With inert forbearance, Luis had taken the coffeehouse project in stride. How many outreach initiatives, Spurlock wondered, had Luis watched flower and die? How many hours, days, years had he spent clearing the debris of all-volunteer projects, the pageants, the potlucks and rock operas, the water tables set up along the avenue for Marathon Sunday, the much-advertised yearly blessing of the animals with its attendant panoply of shit-shapes to be hustled into his dustpan? Luis responded to each new request with an undeceived and unobliging, If that's how you want it, Padre. But hadn't Luis, unasked, taken to hauling chairs and tables from the sidewalk every evening? He had Luis to thank for that, for the vigilant eyebolt, for the sidewalk hosed clean each night of sugar wrappers, lemon rinds, and coffee stirrers, for the doors opened every morning, the coffee made, and the pastries laid out for the first customers. He had Luis to thank, and alas, probably God too, for leaving the side door of the church unlocked. Luis had assumed this dereliction of duty not long after the coffee shop had opened for business, as though to say,
If we are going to lure the well-heeled from the avenue with cappuccino and biscotti, then certamente we could accommodate more shadowy passers-by with a dry place to sleep.
At first, only one or two men slipped in, vague forms vaguely familiar with the church steps, where they would hunch and rock before burrowing for the night into middens of flattened cardboard, newspaper, bubble pack, and Spurlock could not bear to think what else. Later, when the weather cooled, more faces appeared at the shelter, followed shortly by a citation from the city, mounting complaints from some parishioners, enthusiasm from others, and the long, tedious debates in vestry meetings, the endless declension of earnest phrases, the least of these, the least we can do, doing mission, clarity of mission, mission creep. Holding up the citation, Mrs. Nickerson said as though for the first time, For this, Chief, we have our Luis to thank. The visitors were men, most of them older, many of them trembling, all untalkative. God knew how long they had lived on the street, or what they had experienced at Bellevue or Ward's Island, to drive them from the archipelago of licensed city shelters. The parish might have been more welcoming had they been battered women or gay teens expelled from suburban homes, but these shuffling mutterers shrank from all expression of sympathy or concern. To each one, sealed in his grease-caked garments and encasing stench, the merest acknowledgment seemed unbearable. For Father Spurlock, the stench was the hardest part. At some point, in a gesture of what he'd described as solidarity, he'd begun sleeping 4 nights a week on a cot alongside them. He would doze briefly, overcome by the exhaustion of the day, only to wake when the smell reached him, an infiltrating mist, the sublimation of ash and tooth rot, urine and scurf. In time, he thought at first, he might learn to give himself over to it, even to welcome it as a cleansing penance. Solidarity with the poor, the naked, the captive. O cinder path of saintly effacements! The nobility of it, the absurdity of it! A bubble of his drowned divinity school idealism rose up in his throat, then dissipated like a sighing belch. How quickly it had happened! His transformation from freshly ordained provisional deacon scrubbed and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?